Hello, and welcome to episode 5 in this series of the Harrods True Tales of Luxury podcast. Today, we find ourselves in the Perrier Jouet Champagne Terrace, a beautiful terracotta conservatory that runs along the outside of the store. And although it's a little bit too early for champagne, I'm assured by Harrods chef Marcus Bohr that it's never too early for Bellini, which will definitely appeal to my companions today, the Harrods fashion and beauty editors Stacey Duguid and Katie Service, who are joining me to discuss our pick of the most desirable and awe-inspiring objects to be found in the store. Plus, as always, we have a very special guest joining us. This week, it is the critically acclaimed Spanish chef, José Pizarro. With his 3 restaurants in London, some of the hottest tables around, I'm looking forward to asking him all about what's sizzling in the world of food right now and what Spain brings to London's multi-gastronomic table. But first, let's join Katie and Stacey and see exactly what they've brought to the table this week. Hello, girls.
Hello, Tiff.
Time for a Bellini?
Definitely. Always.
Snap.
I've got such a good one today. I'm really excited.
Oh, really? Mm. Are you spoiling to go first?
Yeah, maybe.
Stacey, you spoiling to go first?
I'm not, actually.
Oh, Katie, take the floor. Take the table.
Okay, all right. So I brought mine wrapped up today because I don't want either of you peeking before. But okay. I'm going to unwrap it now. I've just brought it in a little bag.
Oh, it's a lovely wooden box. I bet that smells beautiful. I always want to smell everything, don't you?
Yes,
it's
always.
Very tactile, isn't it? It's a beautiful kind of rectangular, very handcrafted looking
box. Is it cedar wood?
It is sandalwood.
It looks like a cigar box.
It does, but I haven't taken up smoking.
So sandalwood was used in ancient civilization to protect.
That's actually very knowledgeable of you, Sis. Well done. It was, yes, and it's a sacred wood, but it's also used quite regularly in perfumery. Mm. Which, if I open this box right now, I can show you that inside.
That is pure delight. Whatever
it
that,
is, loving so the beautiful. There are 5 little bottles with handwritten labels on each bottle, and actually, really sweetly tucked into the inside of the wooden lid is a little kind of concave slot for perfume blotters, filled with 5 or 6 perfume blotters.
And that's because you shouldn't spray perfume on your skin when you're testing it, is it?
I mean, you would second, but first you might want to smell it kind of abstractly away from your skin because, of course, your skin affects the way a perfume smells. But can I please tell you about the brand? Because we haven't even mentioned it yet. Fueguier.
Fueguier.
Quite difficult to pronounce for an English person, but really beautiful when you get the hang of it. Fueguier, 1883.
Is it to do with smoke?
No. It's actually a really, really interesting story. So it's Patagonian. So it's to do with a location in Patagonia that in 1883, Charles Darwin had a chance meeting with Captain Robert Fitzroy while he was returning a local girl that he'd kidnapped called Fueguier Basket.
This is pre-Me Too, isn't it?
This is quite a long time ago, several centuries. And so this, the brand sort of represents, it was founded by a guy called Julian Bedell, who I've met actually, who is charming and one of the more interesting people that you'll meet in life. It was founded in 2010. He is from Argentina. And he is the whole brand is an homage to naturalism and to botanists. So it's about a space and a place in time where the human race was quite minimal and plants and nature ruled the earth. And if you have a chance to go down to the lifestyle area of the beauty halls, it has the most beautiful boutique. It's all made with this beautiful wooden surfaces, and you smell the perfumes in a really unusual way. They scent the insides of glass domes, and the glass domes are placed upside down. So you come along and you smell you pick up the dome and you smell it and you get this amazing waft of the perfume, which is spritzed in the domes every morning. And I mean, the thing you need to know about this brand is that Julian hasn't trained for decades in Grasse with other traditional perfumers. He is an artist, he's a designer, he's a musician. He's come from the other side of the world, from the flower fields of Grasse. So he's got a completely different perspective on perfume. And as a result, he's solved so many perfume problems. You know, he's created vegan musks, for example. Mm. He has created a perfume brand that does not use plastic, which when you think about the perfumes that you buy, they're all packaged in cellophane wrappers. They've got perfume lids. These are actually packaged all in wooden boxes. And a little bit like wines, they come in these wooden boxes. And there's only 400 made of every single batch. And you have a little number on your box. But before I hand over to one of you, I just want to tell you a bit about this specific box. It's an amber box. And it contains 5 beautiful amber base scents. And just the stories behind these perfumes are so beautiful. So Alhambra, for example, is about a fortress that was built in the height of the Arab Empire. It was known as the Red One. And the Moorish poets described it as a pearl set in emeralds. And it's got amber, rose, and ambergris. And it's warm and it's sensuous and it sort of shimmers richly. Yeah, have a smell.
I'm gesturing that I need to try it because you're making it sound so delicious.
So can I also tell you about...
Can I try Alhambra?
This one, for example, yes. So this is Belena de la Pompa.
Are they handwritten, these labels?
They are. I mean, it's the most beautiful craft and time that goes into these boxes. And the boxes are actually made in their sort of wood factory mm-hmm. in Milan. So Belena de Pampa is beautiful. It's the image of a whale resting on the grass of the Pampas. And it's got 13 different musts in it. It's got ambergris, which, do you know about ambergris?
So hang on, sorry, I was just lost in Alhambra. Where are we now?
So we're now talking about a whale resting on the grass in the Pampas.
Oh, okay.
So ambergris is this incredible ingredient, which is actually completely cruelty-free, but it comes from the vomit of a whale.
Oh my gosh, I thought I'd heard it all.
I don't know whales vomiting.
No, so basically it helps them to kind of clear their systems and they eject this substance onto the
beach.
And
who's there catching it?
People who collect ambergris, and it's a very rare perfume ingredient.
This is what whale vomit smells like. It's actually delicious.
It's actually an aphrodisiac.
Is it?
It is an aphrodisiac note.
It's very sweet, isn't it? It's like a sort of confection.
I'm with Alhambra.
I'm actually wearing Duenas del Cuerpo.
Can I put this on my skin?
Oh, it's beautiful. So that's Duenas del Cuerpo, and it's the smell of summer skin on sand dunes in the desert.
It's so romantic, this brand. The storytelling beautiful. Is extraordinary. I mean, the storytelling in beauty generally is extraordinary, but this feels so authentic. It is another level. It feels so right for now, a kind of return to nature, people really wanting something unique that's unique to them. And I imagine these fragrances, so this is one set, and how many different sets are there?
So this is the amber set, so they're warm fragrances, but he has several variants, and it's based around the fragrance families, so the woods, the ambers, you've got floral ones, and that's actually the way that his boutique is laid out. You sort of walk along a curve of these fragrances that takes you through floral, fruit, gourmand, which is like the edible scents, to woods, ouds,
and actually, that's one thing I would say is you learn a lot when you go and spend time there. And you don't have to buy anything. You can just go and dwell on his perfume bar, if you like. And everyone there is so knowledgeable. And actually, what you've brought along today, these sort of 5 riffs on amber, if you smell them next to each other, they're kind of variations on a theme and you learn more about that scent, don't you?
The layers it's really of them, interesting. The depth of them. And what I love about this actually is because, I mean, over the last 6 months, I feel like I've moved on from my fragrance because it reminds me of
past life.
The past. Yeah. And I love rose, but I also love amber. And actually, what I love about this is that you can sort of, depending on your mood or the time of the day, you could go from Alhambra to whale vomit, all in the space of 24 hours, which is really appealing.
It's a lovely way to shop.
Mm. Do you know what I find? I've just put it on my skin, the Alhambra, and I've had it on for about 5 minutes, and I find it very grounding.
I think there's something, like you were saying, about sandalwood, isn't it? And he uses lots of ingredients like that, Julian. He uses Palo Santo, which is obviously very grounding too.
Stacey was a witch in a past life.
We're going to get on to witchery in just a second, actually, ooh, funnily enough.
Yeah. A nice segue. Stacey, do something witchy.
Look into my eyes, Tiffany. Ooh. What do you see in front of you.
I see something really gorgeous.
Here, take it. It's a beautiful, a circle within a circle within a circle. It's a necklace, a pendant that is made of blue diamonds and white diamonds on 14 karat gold. And it's by a designer called B Goddess. Now, B Goddess is fascinating. And actually, it really does sort of carry on from what you were saying about symbolism and ancient civilizations, Katie. So in 2008, actually prior to 2008, B Goddess, who was set up by AJ Sirim, she's Turkish, she lives between London and Istanbul. She was working for Microsoft, and then she went on to work for Coca-Cola. And she had what was kind of described as an epiphany. She realized she was leading a vacuous, empty life and wanted more from it. And so she started to study goddess symbolism, ancient symbolism.
I love her already.
Me too.
I mean, she went to goddess school. She studied all the goddesses. Goddess philosophy is a thing.
Where is goddess school? Mount Olympus.
She went to Mount Olympus. No, she took it upon herself. I mean, there's not an actual goddess school, but that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
Maybe we could set that up as a business in 2021.
Just go find Mount Olympus now.
Anyway, so she set on this journey to really sort of self-discovery. And she, as she was looking into goddess philosophy and ancient symbolism and ancient civilizations, she started looking at, you know, the hand of Fatima, the Star of David, all these ancient symbols that she felt could bring inner strength. And so she launched a jewelry collection based on goddess symbols, based on everything that she'd learned in astrology. She went hardcore, 4 years of learning everything about kind of astrology and symbolism and ancient civilizations. And I mean, she's so learned. She's launched this collection and it's so successful now. I mean, Rihanna wears it, Kate Moss wears it. It's so beautiful. It's very delicate. So imagine like little stars, and there's a dagger, which actually represents, you would think a dagger means, I don't know, something aggressive, but it means protection and new beginnings.
So she took it from lots of different mythologies.
She took it from lots of different mythology. And, you know, talismanic jewelry has been very fashionable for the last, I'd say, 5 years. A lot of brands have looked to ancient talismanics, especially paganism, symbology. Even I remember going into a showroom in Paris a couple of seasons ago and seeing all these amazing pagan symbols on a handbag. You know, designers reference symbolism. They've referenced symbolism for eons. But what she does is she takes it a step further. She actually does a reading for her customers. So she's now a life coach, a sort of spiritual life coach, and she blends that with her daily business. So what she will ask her customer, her clients to do, and we have it here, this opportunity to have this done at Harrods, you come in and she sets out the symbols, which we'll go into in a little minute, in a moment, and you sit there and you have almost like a reading with her. What's going on in your life? What do you need? And it's a little, it's a cross between tarot, mythology, and a sort of a spirit reading. And then you choose your symbol based on how you're feeling. And then that becomes sort of a way to channel your inner feminine power. And she's all about the feminine power. It's a very interesting brand. And I feel that it's so important for now. I feel it's so relevant for now. I feel like people are looking for something. So an amulet is something from ancient civilization that's, I mean, so ancient that you could, an amulet was something that you would wear. It could be a shirt, a banner, a word that you carry in your pocket, a pebble. And talismans were something that you carry in your pocket. But she's blended the two to create these kind of amazing, beautiful, decorative symbols that your power, you are the person who channels the object.
So playing straight man to your witch here, I'm not a kind of a religious or spiritual type of believer, but I do think what's interesting about jewelry is that you, I don't know whether it's because it is so intimate with your body, but you do connect with it in a much deeper way than you would, say, fashion. I mean, like, I don't know about you, but I wear my jewellery day and night. Like, I don't often switch it out or change it up.
It becomes lucky and it becomes part of you and it becomes part of your who you are.
Yeah.
But I also read, Tiff, that that there is this return to things like tarot at the moment as a form of self-care, and less as a kind of spiritual thing, but more of a kind of guide and something that you can turn to in troubled times to kind of, I suppose, counsel yourself through it. It's interesting.
Do you? I always twist my ring when I'm a little bit stressed or anxious. Do you?
No, there's a reason for that. So actually that brings your body back to the... So it's a bit like I just said with fragrance. It grounds you. It grounds you and it brings you back into the moment. And what I do when I find I'm in a stressful situation or if I'm in a meeting and I need to really focus, I take my ring off or I put a pendant in my hand that I'm wearing around my neck and I just hold it. And I think really, I mean, we don't have to believe in witchcraft, symbolism, ancient paganism, the hand of Fatima. We all have our own moments. But actually, when you think about that, exactly what you said, the personalization element of jewelry, the way that we don't take our jewelry off anymore. I mean, I wear this necklace, this heavy necklace every day. I sleep in it, I shower in it. And jewelry has become part of who we are. And it's a real true outward expression of who we are. And I do believe that we do impart our own feelings into jewellery. And in fact, if you do believe in witchery, one of the things that you do when you have a spirit reading, which I'm partial to, is the spirit, the clairvoyant, or however we want to describe that person, would take a piece of your jewellery that you wear every day, put it in the palm of their hand, and they would be able to read your energy off that piece of jewellery.
Well, I love that conversation, actually, because it leads very nicely and coincidentally into what I brought today. So, you know what these are.
One of my favourite things, also second to jewellery, sunglasses.
Yes, exactly. And now you probably recognise the brand. You see?
Yes.
Linda Farrow.
Linda Farrow.
Am I right in thinking I saw this pair in the window of Harrods this morning?
You did. So there are three pairs of Linda Farrow sunglasses here. This one, actually, these sort of white, fairly everyday, should we say, ones?
Yeah, they're quite 1950s. They've got a small cat eye. Yeah. And a kind of transparent lens.
I've got them on now and they're super comfortable. These are Linda Farrow's bestsellers. So that's just as an FYI. These are probably what you know Linda Farrow for, which are an extraordinary pair of 1970s vintage goggles. They look like butterfly wings. I'm going to put these on.
Oh my God, you are ready to party with Mick Jagger.
I think I'm ready to create, darling, a fantastic
like
pot
a
or something.
Butterfly wing that... enamelling, I think it's enamelling.
Yes. Now, this is how I first came to Linda Farrow, actually, was through these fabulous vintage sunglasses, which she really popularized as her brand. But then what I really want to talk about today are these glasses here, the third pair, also Linda Farrow, which are something like a hybrid between the fabulous fashion glasses and the everyday 1950s numbers.
You see, circular. So these are almost entirely circular. And they have
circular, aren't they?
It's a circle within a circle, so there's a kind of outer rim that doesn't have any lens in it.
They still
60s vibe.
Yeah, they still
them.
Feel quite vintage, don't they?
And it has an ombre lens,
very light on the nose, very beautiful. Now these are actually a special range of glasses that Linda Farrow has produced in connection with a charity called Smartworks to celebrate Linda's 50th anniversary. So Linda Farrow is actually a real person. And she was the first person to launch high fashion sunglasses, if you like, in 1970. And she was also the first woman in the eyewear world. Obviously, fashion was incredibly male dominated back in that time. And she was the first kind of female fronted brand. So go Linda. She's a Londoner and she really trailblazed London fashion for women, as in the business of it. And has been terribly successful. She is actually now retired and her son, Simon, runs Linda Farrow. And he thought that for the 50th anniversary of the brand, it would be a really good idea to celebrate other London icons. She's got great people together, like the writer Scarlett Curtis, like the publisher of Penguin Books, Gail Reebok, like Lydia Forte of Forte Hotels, Naomi Shimada, that lovely model.
Her.
We love
yeah,
her. She did the
great.
Cover of Harrods magazine, didn't she? Zara Martin, singer Vanessa White. Really wonderful women who represent London now. And what she's done is she, Simon has, with his mother, dedicated 50% of the profits of all of this to Smart Works.
That's fantastic.
So do you know what SmartWorks is?
Please tell us. That was my next question. I know a little bit about SmartWorks, so tell us more.
Well, this is why it leads on really nicely from what you were saying about how jewellery is a talisman, which is, I think we all know that at the heart of fashion, what it does for us is it gives us an inner confidence. So if you put something on and you know you look good in it or you feel good in it, you just walk that little bit taller, don't you? You just feel like you're that much more ready to take on the world. And that is basically the very simple concept that SmartWorks operates on, which is if you are a woman looking for a job, and quite often you may have been to quite a lot of interviews and not been successful, your confidence is very quickly depleted. And walking into the next job interview, not feeling on top of the world, is not the greatest place to start. What SmartWorks does is it gets women who have job interviews through its doors, gives them a brand new interview outfit. We have loads of, I say we actually, because I have to confess here that I have worked with SmartWorks for a number of years, a number of stylists that come in and help style up women into outfits. And then you get an hour's worth of interview training and then off to the job. And what's brilliant is that SmartWorks has a 64% success rate of getting women jobs once they pass through its doors, which is a really good statistic.
And that's those incredible. Clothes, are they donated clothes from brands or how does that work?
Yeah, brands and people. So lots of people clear out their wardrobes. And actually, you probably remember the Duchess of Sussex is the patron of SmartWorks. And she said a really nice thing, actually, which is that jacket in your wardrobe that got you that really good job or that got you that really good deal or that you pitched something brilliant in, donate that and pass on that good chi and that good energy.
That's lovely.
And give it to someone else and she'll take it on. And I kind of think that that's a little bit about what these sunglasses are, which is if you buy a pair of these sunglasses, first of all, Linda Farrow have already donated some pairs to SmartWorks anyway.
I mean, I love the idea of going to a job interview in these glasses.
I'd just like to point out they are both wearing the sunglasses, so I'm going to put on the most outrageous pair just to keep up.
Well, it is quite sunny up here.
Yeah, should we just keep them on all day? You see, I already feel like it's rose-tinted spectacles, isn't it?
I'll take it off Bellini, please.
Pass that Bellini we were talking about earlier.
Let me wear that. Now, each week on the True Tales of Luxury podcast, we arrange for a very special guest to join us for a chat. And this week is no different. Chef, restaurateur, and author of several wonderful books, our guest this week is maestro of Spanish cooking and tapas wizard, Jose Pizarro. Jose, welcome to Harrods.
No, welcome. I'm so happy to be back. This is like a dream came through.
Which way did you come? Did you come through the food halls?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they took me for the staff entrance today.
Oh, that's the magic entrance.
I love it. I just so, I will say, thrilled.
Yeah.
You know, to go for where is the thing happening, see the people and just coming in. It's just like, wow.
It's like through the backstage, yeah, isn't it?
I love that. That is the way.
Yes. You know that film, Goodfellas? The Martin Scorsese film. There's a very famous scene in Goodfellas where he takes his girlfriend on a date through the backstage of a restaurant, and it's one of the kind of longest uncut shots in film where they go in through the back door, through the kitchens, and then off into the nightclub. And I always feel like that when you come into Harrods.
I have to say, it's absolutely stunning, as beautiful as the proper shop.
Great. Well, people might be wondering why we have you here, because we don't have a restaurant from Jose Pizarro in Harrods yet. But there is something here that you feel that you're very connected to, and actually I wanted to talk about it on the podcast and share it with Katie and Stacey, and then I realized I was completely unqualified. And I discovered that you are one of its greatest ambassadors. So tell us what it is and a little bit about it.
Today we are going to be talking about Cinco Jotas.
Cinco Jotas.
Cinco Jotas. Perfect pronunciation.
Oh, I thought it was called 5J. So thank goodness you're here.
I think it's more, Cinco Jotas is more the way to say it. It's even more beautiful and bring me back to Spain. Anyway, Cinco Jotas is jamón ibérico, 100% acorn fat.
So a ham that comes from a pig that is 100% acorn fed. So they only eat acorns.
Doesn't eat only acorns because the animal need to digest very well. And the acorns are very hard. They need lots and lots of grass. Uh-huh. And mushroom to be able for them to
grass and mushrooms.
Yeah, anything that they can find around, they will eat.
So these pigs, they just eat mushrooms and grass and acorns, but they eat in the most beautiful place, don't they? Where are they come from?
They are coming from southwest of Spain, Andalucía, Extremadura, that is north of Andalucía, and then the Portugal side as well, and it's quite few there around as well. Why is the only place in Spain they have acorns?
Oh, I was going to ask you that. They don't have acorns anywhere else.
They have, but it's not as good in this area. Uh-huh. And the weather that you need is perfect for the curing.
And is it only pigs from this area that make jamón ibérico? And then there's a special, the Cinco Jotas has their special breed of pigs, aren't they, from that area?
Have to be 100% Iberico pig. Mm-hmm. You can make jamón ibérico you can mix and match with another types or breed of pigs. But for Cinco Jotas, have to be only animals that are 100% Iberico. I compare jamón ibérico Cinco Jotas with caviar, with the best champagne or the best cava or the best wine. It's so much thing going on that you don't see, but make the flavor just unique.
I completely agree with you. So I have been a jamón ibérico fan for a long time, but it wasn't until I tried Cinco Jotas that I realized how good jamón ibérico could really be. Can you describe the taste?
Well, that's difficult, I have to say, but it's something when you just carve, because you still have to carve the ham properly, and people think it's quite easy, you know, take the knife, take the ham, and that's it, and it's not. Even myself, I'm 48 years now, and I've been eating ham almost all my life. Not when I was a baby, as you can imagine, but the rest always. It's people that know how to carve absolutely perfect.
So this is when you see the big leg on the steak, on the board, and then there's a special knife.
It's a special knife, and you have to carve just a small, very thin slice. Why? I always say, jamón ibérico have to be eaten with your hands. Why? Because the first thing you do is giving some heat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah? And then, well, I don't say fat, I say oils. And the oils just melt so easily that when you put your heat, just pick at the ham, that second just is giving some heat to the ham. What happened? All the aromas, all the things start moving there. And when you just put that slice of luxury in your mouth, it just explodes. It's coming saltiness because it's curing salt, but it's not salty at all. All the nuttiness, all that flavor, or that smell first, of nuts. And then when you just, it's just explosion.
So tell me how you got here then. So where were you born exactly?
I born very close to Andalucía, where Cinco Jotas is based.
Oh, so that's why you know it.
Yeah, I grew up in a farm, and I was so tiny that I still remember how I was running behind the pig, taking the tail, you know?
And, so it was a pig farm that you grew up
in? Yeah, no, but always you have a pig. Pig was the food for all year.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
the pig, you get two ham, two shoulders, chorizo, loins, and you have the whole, and the tocino, that is the lovely lardo. You know, that lasts the whole year.
And were your mother and father good cooks? Or?
My mom was extremely good cook. As I say, I'm coming from a farm. I was never allowed to be in the kitchen because my mom always was helping my dad. And for her to be in the kitchen is to cook the best, but don't miss. You know what I mean? I was not, you go away from here. You are not allowed to be here.
Yes.
And she was extremely good cook. And she learned from my grandmother, from my dad's side.
Uh-huh. Oh, interesting. Yeah. So she learned through your father's mother.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so at what point did you decide, I'm going to turn this into a business?
Well, this is quite strange. I studied dentist technician.
I was a dentist.
Yeah. And I was waiting for a job, and I thought I was like 3 months gap And I thought, I have to be doing something. I cannot be, look at me, you know? And I thought, let's do a cookery course. And now it's 26 years and I will never go around a mouth just for to feeding people. That's it. I completely changed. It was only like a month after I start the course that they sent to me to a restaurant to washing dishes. I thought, I cannot be. I love people. I need to be around people. For me, this quarantine being so difficult and so glad.
Yes, big separated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think actually there was a really lovely interview with you in the Sunday Times this weekend. And actually one of the things that the Sunday Times writer said, which I thought was lovely that the two of you discussed, was about how restaurants are so much about community and people and networks. And with this moment where restaurants have been closed, we're really missing that connection with each other.
That is what bring me completely take that job and back to different one. I love people. I need to be around people. It's like my food as well. I need to see my kitchens. All of them are open. Mm. And I need to see. It's like my kitchen at home. I love entertaining. I love entertaining. It's something that I love to be rich enough. Well, I'm not all rich, so rich to be just feeding and giving food to people. Just entertaining will be my dream.
So are you one of these chefs then that when you're cooking, you like to come out around the tables and talk to the people who are eating in your restaurant and sit down with them?
It's important for me to know what is going on. Hopefully almost always it's a good experience, but sometimes, thanks God, it's not too often. You need to sit down with them and just try to sort it out. No, it's just, it's for me, it's nice to see my customer and to talk with them because in the end, they are part of the family.
And do you think Londoners make good restaurant guests?
The good thing about London, and for me, it's a big surprise, and I will say UK, is my customer, they know what they want. Not in the beginning, I'm telling you, when I was talking about ham, when I was arrived here 21 years ago, people didn't know much about jamón ibérico at all. And for me, that hurts.
I remember they started to sell it in Borough Market and it became a thing and no one had heard of it before and suddenly it was a thing.
It was in Brindisa when I was working and for me it was hurting. Wow, this parma ham is amazing. I was like... That was killing me. Nothing wrong with parma ham. I think it's absolutely incredible product. It's absolutely stunning. Everything was parma ham. I was like, no, it's jamón ibérico. And to try to explain to people that a plate of ham is costing £25 for 100 grams was like, no, that is not happening. I said, just try. When the people try, it's just like out.
They are completely
converted to that.
I totally agree with you because actually I always think that the best quality food is actually some of the most fabulously good value product that you can get. Because if you think about, you know, if you're going to buy the best quality cashmere coat or the best quality diamond necklace or the best quality pair of Oxford brogues, how much money you'll spend. But you can have the best quality in the world, chocolate or ham or coffee, and actually it's relatively accessible as a price point. So for you to say it's £25 for a plate of ham... sounds like a lot, but £25 for the best plate of ham of your entire life that you will ever, ever eat.
And it's so much thing going on behind that plate. You know, it's, that plate can be, that piece of meat can be 7 years old since the animal is born, until it's on your plate. It's between 5 to 7 years. And it's so much history, so much passion, so much love that is put to those animals. When you see that pig running around the fields, yes, you know, they are happy. They are kings and queens, I have to say. They are just, you see them running around with their fluffy ears, like bam, bam, bam. It's just, it made you happy. It made you happy because a happy food, a happy animal, a happy producer make that product happy. It's love. You know, my mom always say, and my dad, do whatever you want to do in your life. I was a very bad student, I have to say. Not bad, but...
Were you naughty at school?
A bit naughty, yeah. He was like, dentist technician, chef. Was, no, now chef, now go to London. No, what is going on? Do whatever you want to do, but do with love.
Do what you're doing, but do it with love.
And it's so important. It's so important to see those producers, those farmers, those people that are checking and looking for that ham coming from the cellars, they move, I think, every 3 months from one space to another one. And when you see that guys, then four generation after generation and been looking after that, you know, they know just with the touch the hamon is going to be perfect. It's love. You know what I mean? It's love. It's what it is. When you produce amazing cava, we are talking about cava, we are talking about a simple soup. Have to be everything done with love. And those animals, I have to say, you see them and you just see that they are happy and you just see so lovely. You just say, you know what? I'm so sorry that you are going to go away somewhere else, but I know the jamón maybe is going to be in my restaurant and I know it's going to be fantastic.
We will spread the love. Exactly. Oh, Jose, thank you so much for joining us today.
No,
you certainly spread the love here. I think we're now heading off down to the food halls to have some cigarettes.
Well. No, but thank you. Thank you and thanks for, you know, to be here. And it's so lovely to see everyone is back to the new normal, keeping the distance and to be here talking about something I love. Thank you.
Jose, thank you so much for coming by. That just about brings us to the end of this episode of the True Tales of Luxury podcast. I'm so grateful to Jose Pizarro for dropping by, although he has left me with a severe yearning for some of his beautiful jamón. Thank you so much for listening, and if you'd like to receive new episodes as soon as they're available, do subscribe in your podcast app. Until next time, bye for now.